Thank you very much for taking the time out of your very busy schedule to join us. We very much appreciate it. For those of you who are not familiar with Dr. Anand, let me give him a quick introduction. Dr. Sunil Anand has been practicing homeopathy for over 20 years. He's earned special recognition, especially for his work in pediatrics. He's a popular teacher worldwide. You teach in India, North America, Europe, all over the world. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right, Kim.
Okay, very good. And he's associated with the CMP Homeopathic Medical College in Mumbai and has also been an honorary visiting professor in DS Homeopathic Medical College in Pune, India. Over a period of 15 years teaching and conducting lectures for undergraduates as well as postgraduates, Dr. Anand rose to the designation of associate professor. He's conducted specialized outpatient clinics in pediatrics at both institutes and has been a very popular teacher. In the fall of 2009, he began teaching a two-year postgraduate course at the Vancouver Academy, Homeopathic Academy in Vancouver, British Columbia. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about that a little bit later. Dr. Sunil Anand has also been closely associated with the Mumbai group, which includes such well-known homeopaths as Dr. Rajan Sankaran, Dr. Jayesh Shah, along with many other colleagues. He conducts several training programs in homeopathic case-taking techniques. This group, the Homeopathic Research and Charities, offers quality education in homeopathy to students and doctors from all over the world. Dr. Anand is known for his use of casual tools such as toys in the clinic and for his inquiry into doodles and drawings made by his children patients. These have provided insights for his creative and gentle handling of pediatric cases, even those with deep pathology. And I've heard some very good feedback about his work with children from a number of different practitioners. He has a close working relationship with conventional doctors from all areas of specialization, many of whom consult him for treatment for themselves and their families, as well as refer patients to him. If you want more information about Dr. Sunil Anand, you can visit his website, which is www.dr, that's for Dr. Dr. Sunil, S-U-N as in Nancy, I-L, A, N as in Nancy again, A, N as in Nancy again, D.com. So that's www.drsunilanand.com. He's also offering courses at the Vancouver Academy of Homeopathic Medicine in British Columbia. And if you want to find more about his courses there, you can go to the homeopathyvancouver.com website. Dr. Anand has also produced a 2-CD set called Children and Homeopathy, which is available by emailing Donna Powers at powersofhomeopathy@ME, that's MaryElephant.com. So again, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate you taking the time out of your very full schedule to share all of your wisdom and insights about homeopathy.
It's my pleasure, Kim. And yeah, just before we really get started, I need to thank you as well, because not just with me, what I've gone through the other interviews and what you and your team do. I think it's a great effort to make sure that some great work that's going around in homeopathy all over the world reaches people who, for whatever reason, may not be in a position always to attend seminars personally, but at least they can do this through this platform. So thanks to you.
Well, thank you. You know, we're all doing our part to promote homeopathy around the world. It's this amazing system of medicine that really deserves to be known by really the entire population of the planet. So I think we're all doing our part, and thank you for saying that. So, Dr. Anand, let me just start. I know you're involved in something called subjective homeopathy. Can you give us a brief description of what that's all about?
Yeah, sure, Kim. Firstly, the name itself, the idea to create a name is not to necessarily link it with what I do alone, but just to ensure that this very important, so vital aspect in our case-taking, which often goes unnoticed, often goes neglected, in the forms of subjective signs and symptoms. Subjective symptoms, to some extent, we do address, but subjective signs in the form of noticing things, observing things from with all our senses being alert, often goes unnoticed. And that's the reason why I really felt that by putting this name and title, it will hopefully pass on and convey this message to people to realize how important it is to notice subjective signs in our patients, starting with our children. It could be our pets and animals if we are homeopathic veterinarians, and how this technique can be useful to notice things in adults as well. So that's really where the name comes from.
Hmm. Could you give us just a kind of an overview of maybe some case studies, just so we can get a sense of the actual practical utility of this method?
Yeah, sure. Firstly, a little background, Kim. You know, as a student, much before I really knew what kind of homeopathy I really wanted to practice, I remember one case in particular, you know, which at that point struck me very vividly, but in fact it even amused me, because it's in Clark's dictionary, and it's a case where Clark mentions on one occasion going to the hospital and seeing this young girl who was really desperately ill with heart failure and valvular disease, but in a fit of hysterical laughter. And based on this observation, Clark prescribed Crocus sativus, or saffron, and soon this girl, who was propped up for weeks, made a rapid recovery. And this case somehow, I mean, it amused me. And I said, you know, because at that point you're learning about medicine and you're learning about heart and valves. And this homeopath didn't find any of that important enough to choose to prescribe on. But what he chose was something so unique, something so characteristic. And in that I saw is really the merit of homeopathy. And then as I graduated into second year and third year, and we started our clinics, and there was this one homeopath, and we were all eager students sitting in an outpatient department, and there comes a patient with enlarged prostate, you know, benign enlargement of prostate. And he was so impressed when he came up with a remedy and said, oh, you know, without taking too much of a case. And he said, oh, ferrum picricum. And all of us said, wow, I mean, you know, this guy knows his clinical stuff well. Unfortunately for this homeopath, what happened was that when he prescribed, and the paper went into the pharmacy and it came back within 5 minutes, and in despair that, well, we don't have this remedy. And so we wondered, what is he going to do? Is he going to order it or what? And then he smiled at us and he said, oh, no problem. You know, if ferrum picricum is not there, we can give him Sabal Ceruleta. And everyone was impressed. Honestly, I must say I was too, that I mean, this guy has backups, you know. If there's not one, he's got another one. But then I started thinking that what is so characteristic about this? I mean, if this is what one had to prescribe, what is really the difference between conventional medicine or allopathy and homeopathy? What is really striking? And it made me think, and I said, no, this something is wrong here, you know. And these impressions stayed in my mind for many, many years. And I was into practice, and, you know, good teachers came along, and I was enjoying my homeopathy, and pediatrics was always a part because my father is a pediatrician. And it was an interesting time, a good time, but yet not the kind of accuracy that I would really have liked, like how I get, you know, how I feel now. That kind of satisfaction was kind of missing. And then I'd say about almost 20 years ago, I remember this girl with multiple painful abscesses and acute tonsillitis coming to me, because this is what drew the link to this whole Crocus sativus case that I remember reading years ago. And this young girl of about, you know, she must have been 4 or 5. And the mother was telling me this whole history. But for me, what this girl was doing was somehow more fascinating and characteristic than really basic clinical information that the mother was giving me, because what this girl was doing was she was just playing with a piece of blocks which was in my clinic, and she was trying to increase her speed in trying to complete these blocks. And every time she would do it, it's as if she was timing herself, you know, and nodding her head and saying, no, as if she wasn't satisfied enough. She wanted to go faster and faster and faster. And at some point, she felt satisfied that, well, she can't really go any faster. And then she did the next thing. She turned the game around. And with these pieces, about four or five pieces that were there, she started making one design after the other. And so you'd make one design, sort of look at it, shuffle it, come up with another design. And I said, something in me told me that whatever I prescribe for this girl, besides covering the abscess and the tonsillitis, or even if it doesn't at some point, if it is general enough, cover what I see, this phenomena that I'm seeing right here in front of me, I think the remedy has to cover her generally. So the first time it was difficult. I made them sit out, and the case wasn't over yet, but I needed some time to myself, and I opened the repertory and I looked around, and there came to me a rubric, the first rubric, which was quick to act. Because this is really what she was doing. Her actions were going quicker and quicker and quicker, and there were just two remedies in that, Ophia and Lachesis. And I said, okay, this is something I need to confirm when they come back in again. I said, okay, now what's the other thing she's doing? So I started looking again and again. I said, well, it is an activity too, but what kind of an activity? And then I came to the rubric in the repertory, activity creative. And the only remedy, you know, I was amazed to see was coffee again. And I said, okay. So then I got them in again. And I confirmed that, well, if she is quick to act, is it just with the puzzle or is it in general? And then I realized she is quick physically, mentally. Her whole mind was kind of stimulated so quickly, and it was stimulated in speed as well as in creative ideas. At that point, Kim, you know, I knew I'm onto something, and I don't know what, but something made me ask the mother her state during pregnancy, and what came up was really the next part of what unfolds. And what she told me was amazing, in the sense that she said, you know, she is a creative designer, and she knew that once she has this child, she would have to take maternity leave. She had deadlines and she couldn't sleep, and all these ideas would come at night, and she'd just get up and make one design after the other, because still she didn't finish those sketches and she wasn't satisfied with them. She just wouldn't get sleep. And once this idea would come in her mind that she had this particular kind of a sketch, she just couldn't sleep till she had finished this. And going on, and I said, okay, tell me more about the pregnancy. She said, well, about the labor, I must tell you, I was terrified. I mean, I was excited about having this child, but the one thing that really gripped me was that, am I going to make it? And I, you know, that's why I insisted on an epidural, because I felt that the labor pains, I mean, will I be able to handle the pains? I thought this pain, it was a first pregnancy, and it'll kill me. I won't be able to deal with this pain. That made me ask the question about the child. How does she handle pain? She's, did you see she didn't sit down? Mm. I mean, she's got these abscesses on her butt, and it's very sensitive, and she doesn't let anyone even touch it. We can't approach it. And I said, what about her sleep issue? She said, oh, yeah, I mean, she is so excited. If we have to go out for an outing, like a picnic, we have to hide stuff, you know. I mean, if she knows that we are going for a picnic, she won't sleep all night. She is so excited, so sleepless with joy, with excitement. And at that point, when I checked each and everything, but the only thing that didn't come in is, I mean, I was hoping I'd find pain on swallowing with the tonsillitis or something like painful abscess or suppuration. There was nothing. I looked and I looked. And that was the first time when, you know, it was a conflict. And I said, no, I think I'm going to go with this. And I remember giving this girl coffee and just telling them, listen, I'm giving you medicine for 15 days, but I'd really like you to call tomorrow and tell me how this kid is doing, because I had little doubts about this prescription, you know. And she called back the next day and said, you know what, the abscesses have discharged. She's in no pain. She can swallow. There's no throat problem. And then from that time, Kim, there was no looking back, you know. And then there were cases and cases after cases where I just used this technique. But this is really, and I owe this whole thing to the case that I read in Clark's dictionary years ago. So that's the parallel for me. I hope that explains a little bit of the background.
Yes, very fascinating. So it seems basically what you're doing is you're looking for, as you said, subjective signs in the case, and that's the primary focus that helps you to discern the best remedy choice. Is that correct?
I'd say, yeah, what you say is correct, Kim, but I just modify it by saying that, you know, it's something like when I go through all the cases of the masters, I think Lippi did something similar to this in the sense that, you know, there's one characteristic keynote.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and you know, if you can get that characteristic keynote, which I know, I mean, the question that came up to my mind is, what if it's not the right characteristic keynote and it's too superficial? So that's the next part. So once you get that, you use that as an entry point, as you rightly said, and then you play around with that, and it's like a point in the center. It's like a bullseye. Mm. And from the bullseye, you go in a concentric way and confirm all the other levels till you're absolutely sure that that particular thing that you've observed explains each and every part of that case or of that remedy. That's right.
I got it. So in other words, it's some type of quality or theme that runs through pretty much everything in the case.
I'd say that. I mean, I must admit that, you know, it's not, you know, but as you use it more and more, I guess you get familiar with the technique. And, of course, you have to be familiar with where things exist in the materia medica and in the repertory. And often I have to go and check things in the provings. But basically, you're right. That's the technique, yeah.
Okay. So it seems like a very fascinating technique. How difficult is it for a newcomer? Is it something challenging to master, or what's your experience? Because I know you teach a lot of different students around the world. What is your experience in terms of other people learning it and being able to implement it in their own practices?
You know, Kim, I feel the idea of doing all this is really to make this technique user-friendly and that's what I do in my teachings. I mean, to the point of almost without having to tell them that, listen, if I can do it, you can do it too, you know. And so what I really enjoy, which sometimes can't happen in most seminars because of lack of time or, you know, it's just a one-day thing or just 2 days. But what I like to do is 3 or 4 days and keep 1 day or maybe 1.5 day for maybe 1 or 2 live cases. And I see that generally when I start off sharing some cases and go through range of cases with the participants, by the end of day 2 and almost by day 3, when we do the live case together, the feedback that I get where they are involved in the whole process of analyzing the case along with me, and it is such a pleasure to see them getting the knack of it. It's something new to them. Some of them probably are familiar and they, you know, with my work, so they've been doing it in their clinics themselves. But for most of them, like, can I quote just one example of, because it's related to the seminars that we are doing here, and we just had one recently two weeks ago.
Of course. You're welcome to share whatever you'd like.
Okay, so, you know, this is what happened. Like, you know, we proceeded. The whole topic of this seminar was the approach to pre-verbal cases. So, you know, children mainly and infants. And so I shared my cases with them, and just for 1 day. And the next day, session 2 was this live case of this cute little boy, pre-verbal, 11-month case of bronchial asthma. And it was so interesting and fascinating, Kim, that we were talking to this boy, two things came up just very, very prominently. One is, he had kind of dry eczema on his face, and which was red. As he'd run around, I know he wasn't walking still, but the way he'd crawl and he'd sort of hold things and try to, or he'd shout in excitement, and whenever he'd do that, or when we, you know, I was trying to interact with him, and there was one side of him which was very, very friendly, and he wanted to talk, you know, sort of in his own gibberish way, say childish things, reach out to me. But on the other side, when I try to take his toy and not give it back to him, I'd see him resisting. And there was that typical resistance. And with that resistance, the redness on his face, which he had, would get even redder, you know. So on one hand was this friendliness, which was very, very striking, very likable boy. On the other hand, resistance, you know, resistance in the form of actual strength. You have to believe that. I mean, like, at one point he was almost toppling over, and it was his strong grip which he held on to the table which was just next to him which saved him from this fall. And I tried to help him, and I realized this guy doesn't need help, you know, because his grip is so strong. And I couldn't help telling the mother, this fellow, this son of yours is a tough guy. She said, oh, I mean, if this guy is tough, he's definitely strong. I mean, his grip is strong. And if he doesn't want to do something, he can put up a lot of resistance. So the two words that came up were resistance and the need to extend friendship. And it was amazing how the class just sort of analyzed this, because by then we were talking about what the technique is all about. And the whole essence of something which is tough, resisting, and the mother's pregnancy, by the way, was discussed too, and she described this big kind of heavy weight like a load, and I said, tell me more about this load, and she actually went to the point of saying the load was like stones, and then she paused a little, and she said, no, to be very precise, it was not really stones, it was almost like metal, it was like iron load. Like how I go to the gym and do my workouts, that kind of iron. And at that point, I knew that we are now dealing with the source itself. And there were other confirmations in the form of the whole theme of ferrum metallicum on one hand, where this child, when he gets the asthma, what is very characteristic is he wants to be carried, which can be common for any kid. But he, you know, he'll dig with the knee and he will ensure that the mother is strolling and walking about. Now, for a child who has not started walking as yet, this is what, it's not a theorization, but it's an interpretation that his symptoms are ameliorated by slow walking, which, as you know, is again ferrum metallicum. So based on that, the class could get the ferrum metallicum, and then the other part they needed a little aid with, because the phosphorus part of extending and friendship and you know, being so social, the way the whole thing starts with fever, the whole inflammatory part of ferrum phosphoricum. So the whole class, you know, credit to them. And to answer your question, that yes, even for them, once they get the hang of it, they could come to the prescription of ferrum phosphoricum for this 11-month kid, which I thought, I mean, I was very satisfied with, and I was amazed that, I mean, they could get it right, you know, right on.
That must be very gratifying to see that, especially to see your students come up, pretty much everybody come up with the same remedy.
Oh, that's what makes me do this, Kim. I mean,
I know, I hear you. It's a real positive. Yeah.
Going out, not with the feeling that, wow, I mean, he can do it, but what about us? No. But for me, what is more gratifying is when they go out feeling that, oh, yes, you know, we can surely do it, and we are going to give it a shot. And when they give feedbacks, and even when I leave and they send me mails and they share their cases with me, and, you know, I feel my job is done.
Great. I just wanted, could you clarify, you used the word source, and I'm thinking that perhaps some of the people on the call may not be familiar with that. Could you just explain a little bit what you mean when you say the source?
Yeah, that's a good point, Kim. You know, at a certain level, what I'm trying to convey, and we do this a lot, not just me, people from our group, from the Mumbai group, Rajan does it a lot, because, you know, another name of subjective homeopathy, firstly, related to the question that you're asking, is also energy level prescribing or level 6 prescribing. And when we are talking of level 5 and 6, which obviously assumes that people know that there are levels which precede it, 1, 2, 3, and 4. So to summarize this, and not to make it a very, you know, exhaustive point, there are different levels on which one can prescribe. One can prescribe on bronchial asthma itself. So, I mean, Ipecac, Carbo Vegetabilis, Antimonium Tartaricum, Antimonium Arsenicosum, Badiaga, there's so many, right? But as you go down and you start checking the modalities and you go even deeper, and the deeper, I mean, at every level, you there is some resonance and you will get some results in a case. I feel that with the method that we follow, if we are able to get to the point where the patient starts talking about the very source that he or she needs themselves, like how this woman was talking about iron. So iron is the source which she needs, which is ferrum. At that point, if we can correlate and draw a link, is the point where the remedy prescribed at that level, containing the source, goes to the very core, and the most gratifying results in my experience come from there.
Very interesting. Dr. Anand, you're a world-renowned teacher. You have a lot of experience as a practitioner. What would you say, what advice would you give to new students, new practitioners who are trying to have success in their practice? What would you say to them? What would your recommendations be?
A couple of things, Kim. I mean, as you know, I mean, I know you're a teacher and, you know, renowned teacher. You teach all over. I'd say, you know, the basis of all this is a firm foundation in the repertory, in the Materia Medica, in the Organon. And without such a foundation, a new student can be misled. So my advice to them would be is that homeopathy can be fun. It can be creative. But to start with, it has to be logical. You know, it has to be scientific. And we really need to start from there. And at some point, it's not that you disconnect from the former. It's just that you sort of grow from the former and it just merges seamlessly into something which is really meant to coexist together. So my advice to them would be is observe animal behavior, observe mannerisms of people on the street, practice silence, and learn to be patient. These are the main qualities, but while I was preparing this, I said, what really do I want to convey to them? And a large part of my studying, you know, my studying technique, if you can call it, in my student days, has been mnemonics. And certain characteristics came up to me, and I just started writing them down. And it's interesting, you know, by the end of it, what was amazing was that this whole thing of Crocus sativus and the heart and the valvular problem, and the mnemonic word that came up to me there and then was cuspid valve. So CUSPID-V. So there were these 7 points, and I'd like to just, so just give me a second, and yeah, so here it is. So cuspid V, so it's like cuspid valve. So I'd say what they need to remember is C out of that cuspid is for collaboration. So when I say collaboration can come at various levels. For example, at this point I am collaborating, say with you to ensure that we project what I do and what kinds of homeopathy is going around all over the world. I collaborate with people from my team in Mumbai. I collaborate, as you said right in the beginning when you were introducing me, with conventional doctors, because it is only my work, and if my quality of work is good and if I can collaborate with them, then they learn to respect me and my science. So I would tell them, collaborate. You know, I mean, if you're a student, you collaborate with your colleague. You form study groups in which you collaborate and you learn from one another, from your good cases and your challenging cases. You out of that cuspid would be unprejudiced. As you will agree again that any kind of prejudice, the moment you say, well, I've had this case which I used for thyroid and so here is this second case that comes and it's the same remedy that's going to help. And that's where you have become a prejudiced observer. So be unprejudiced. So U is for unprejudiced. S is for stability. You know, what I like about the system of education here is that not just for homeopathy, but for any kind of course, they really encourage you to do a 1 year. And if it's your calling, then go ahead and follow it all the way. But if it's not your calling, then, well, you haven't wasted 1 year. You've still learned a little. And you say, well, you know, it's interesting. It may be fascinating, but it's not for me. You know, so I feel students of homeopathy need to ask themselves first, are they ready? Are they stable enough to absorb what is going to happen? What is the dynamics in the clinic? What are the demands in the clinic? I would tell them seriously to consider that before they want to be serious homeopaths. Because as, on one hand, I say homeopathy can be fun, but, you know, it's a mission, and you need to realize that you have to take it very, very seriously. A lot of hard application is required. After S, P is for patients. So, when a patient is talking and without interrupting, to have to listen to him, till he or, you know, till they finish what they have to say, you need to be very, very... Quality of patience is very important. So I'd encourage that in these students. I is for inductive. So from inductive, it's like inductive reasoning. They should read works and literature on philosophy because it encourages that aspect of inductive reasoning, what Hahnemann spoke, you know, talked about. E is for diligent, you know, so hard application, you know, till you are not satisfied with a case, you should have the ability and to look back critically at your own prescription and work harder till you reach a solution. And finally, V of the valve, cuspid valve, V would be values. I think all doctors should have this, but homeopathy, you know, in particular, you're not just learning medicine, you know, you are learning medicine plus homeopathy. And that is such a large subject, but as you said, so gratifying. But for that, you need to have certain parameters, you know, your code of conduct, your ethics. These are things people don't talk about, Kim, you know, but I feel they go a long way in finally your accomplishments. So this is really what I would advise them.
Oh, that's very good advice. I really appreciate you saying all that. Sunil, I know that you work a lot with children. You work with adults as well, is that correct?
Yes, I do.
Yes.
Yeah.
And could you tell us a little bit about, is the subjective homeopathy similar in the treatment of adults as the treatment of children? And how about infants? Can it be used in infants as well? Could you share a little bit about your experience with that?
Infants, as I told you, this kid who was 11 months, whom we gave ferrum phosphoricum, and then the state correlated with that of the mother, Kim.
Yeah.
I mean, infants, absolutely, you know. I mean, pre-verbal children, yeah, I would say it goes very well. But adults as well. I remember this one case where she was a woman with multiple spinal injuries due to sports. She was very sport-oriented. And while talking about, and she was seeing chiropractors, and while talking about her spine, at some point there was a block. She couldn't go anything beyond that. And that's where, I said, well, she just talked about, she said, I just feel that my spine will snap very easily. And so I have to be very much in control and stay absolutely still at that moment, doctor, because if I move, it will snap. Now, beyond that, she couldn't proceed, and that's where, again, subjective homeopathy came to my aid, where I just gave her a piece of paper and said, why don't you just doodle and just concentrate on snap and control and snapping easily. And from there, the case, she was able to go deeper, and she actually, you know, did a doodle of a rail track. And she said, see, this is how the track is, and it's strong. But at one point, at a certain point, if it is not strong enough, it's going to snap. And I said, yeah, just go on, talk about this. And with the assistance of this doodle, she was able to go much deeper. And she said, well, it's like a twig, you know, a twig that is so delicate and so fragile that if you apply a little pressure more than what you have to, it's going to snap. And from that, we came to the word fragile. And I said, tell more about the word fragile. And she said, oh, it's like my grandmother. You know, just before she died, she was such a lovely woman. And, you know, I have fond memories of her. But, you know, I remember her as at that point, we were scared she'd have falls and have injuries. And I just remember her as one fragile woman. And those lovely China ware that she had, for me, that is fragile too. Once it breaks, you know, it's just disconnected. It's fragmented. So for me, understanding the sensations of, I mean, she was a very sensitive woman, of course. It was confirmed that she needs a remedy from a plant source. And now she was talking about fragile themes, which are themes of brittle, glass-like, of the conifer family, of the Thuja family. And the need to be in control and a lot of gynecological issues, which took me to the remedy Sabina. And with the aid of Sabina, her whole neck and back, which was in such a fragile condition, amazingly responded. Today she's off remedies. It's been more than a year she's not had the need to repeat a dose. She's back to her sports. She's back to all her activities. So absolutely, you know, the answer is that once you are familiar with this technique, you can use this aid very effectively in adults as well. See?
Very interesting. Sunil, I know that you're teaching a series of seminars now at the Vancouver Homeopathic Academy, which is in Vancouver, British Columbia. It's run by my good friends Murray Feldman, Susan Gimble. I know Lori Dack and other people teach there as well. And you're doing a series of seminars there. Could you tell us a little bit about the seminars that you're doing? How many you're doing? What is the nature of the seminars? How long do they last? Whatever information you could provide, I think, would be very useful.
Sure, Kim. Murray and Susan and the group, you know, they're lovely people and they're great friends. And it's really their encouragement that brought me here. And I felt that I need to test what I'm doing in India out here as well and see whether am I just limiting my success to cases that come to me in India or are they applicable here as well. And to my satisfaction, I mean, in this short period that I'm here, I've been doing some private cases on my own, but also mainly these seminars. And these are monthly seminars. We thought that, you know, the way the situation is, there's so many seminars going on, Kim, and also cost factor. We wanted to be sensitive to, you know, and address both these issues. And we felt that we break it up, those who can afford, and we really make this as affordable as possible because there are costs and things in the seminar expenses as well, but make it really, really affordable. It's a three-day seminar, so there are going to be nine. We've finished one. So the idea really is, of course, we are open and flexible, and, you know, so as the feedbacks came in, when people realized that I'm going to come here and do these series of seminars, people suggested topics, so I'm just doing these seminars based on the topics that they have suggested. So there's two mainly to do with children. One was pre-verbal. One is learning disabilities and autism, vaccine damage, vaccine insult issues. But there's also one on lesser-known remedies, autoimmune disorders, psychiatry, women's diseases. So, you know, in all, there'll be nine seminars. We've done with one, so there are eight left, and each of them is 3 days. And as I said, the high point is really the life case. Each and every seminar will have one life case, and the participants will be encouraged on day two, which is when the life case takes place, to go through the whole process and come up with solutions on their own so that by the time day three is over and they're done with, they go away empowered and equipped to use this effectively in their own practices.
Sunil, is it necessary to take the first class to take the other ones? Or can, in other words, you have to take the whole series, or is it possible to choose individual sessions and just take those?
Well, we have offered incentives for people who want to do more than three because there is a link, for sure. But at the same time, we have realized that for various reasons, because some come from long distances, some, as I told you, the finances, and we are trying to do it in such a way that within one seminar, even if they attend one, you know, they should get a really good feel of how to use the method. But if they do go through the full thing, because the advantage of going through more is that we will offer them the opportunity to see these live cases, how they are doing as follow-ups, as video follow-ups, and they will get to see all that. And that, of course, is so much more enjoyable. You know, when you're running a class which has familiar people month after month, I think, you know, that would be a great learning experience for them.
Mm. Sunil, if people want information about this, they go to the Homeopathic Academy website. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And as you said, Donna Paz, they have her email ID, and she will provide all kinds of information as whatever is their requirement.
I'm going to repeat that again in case people weren't on at the beginning of the call. So the Homeopathic Academy website is homeopathyvancouver.com. And is there a special place to go, or is it pretty obvious where your information is located on that?
No, it's on that is directly announcements. Under announcements is my link where they mention my presence here in the continuing studies program. And under that is the information about the series of seminars.
Okay, good. And then for people who want information about the 2-CD set on children and homeopathy, they can contact Donna Powers at powersofhomeopathy@ME, that's MaryElephant.com. We're running short on time, and I would like to give some other people an opportunity to ask some questions, but I'm going to just ask you one more quick question, which is probably not a quick question, but what do you see as the future of homeopathy in today's age, and also what do you see as what is your vision for the future of homeopathy in Canada?
I'd answer this quickly. I think if our basic objective is clear, Kim, then the future is great. You know, I remember because you know I look at any profession as it has to give you a deep feeling of gratification, and that is where I feel is our biggest strength in homeopathy, because I look at it as a system of medicine. Really, for a better world and a better society. And I mean that. And I, as a young teacher at the CMP College in Mumbai, I remember this one case that was referred to me, and it was an amazing case of this man who was so violent and abusive, and he had been suggested an amputation above the knee level, and that's when this case was referred to me. So, you know, you had to prescribe and the remedy had to be absolutely accurate and you had just about 48 hours and no more. And this case really challenged me, and I you know, went through all the information that I had, and he was talking about stuff like flying in the sky, and I said, where is all this fitting in? And at the same time, at the physical level, we were bandaging him and he was getting more abusive. He was saying, I mean, I'm talking of burning pains here and you guys are bandaging me. But when I touched his leg and it was absolutely icy cold. And then it made me really study and apply myself, and I realized that what he's talking is all essences of CKL Core. And when I went into CKL Core, it made me realize that it is really one of the derivatives for LSD. So we are talking of a drug phenomena here with him wanting to fly in the sky, etc. He got CKL Core. There was an orthopedic surgeon, a dear friend who was attached to the institute as well, who was watching this. Together, we resolved this case all the way. And this boy who was sort of, you know, just disregarding his family and totally disconnected from his child, when he healed and he was limping, because when the wound was healing, he came to see me after the remedy. And he introduced this child to me and said, I want you to meet my child. And at that moment, I realized, you know, that we are so blessed that this is the science which, you know, it can make a person who was really going towards self-destruction get rehabilitated back with his family. This is the science which I want to be in. So I feel if that is their objective, you know, there can only be success, nothing more.
And what do you see as the future of homeopathy in Canada, Sunil?
I'd say it's good. You know, the Canadians are hardworking, and Vancouver. We like Vancouver. It's a lovely city, and you know, it's organic. And but with that organic comes a certain amount of, I'm sorry to say, but a little back attitude and a little comfort zone, which is okay. It's great, but I feel that I'm talking of Vancouver first. I feel they need to realize that they need to apply themselves, you know, and they don't need to worry about regulations coming in, which I think is part of how a science grows. And if they go with the flow, and if they are able to work hard, which sometimes may mean, you know, taking calls, emergency calls, after all, this is what our profession is all about, working on the weekends if really a case needs that. And I somehow see resistance there, you know. If they can do that, then the future is good. But if they let their comfort zone come ahead of what they need to apply in, they may miss the boat. So that's my only concern. So, but apart from that, I would say it's a great place, and North America too. I see a lot of application of good homeopathy. I just wish they'd collaborate. You know, as I said, my first point, if they'd collaborate a bit more with one another, have the, you know, courage and conviction to arrange study meetings, then it'll only get better.
Yeah, the work ethic in India is quite a bit different than it is here in North America, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say so.
You know, Sunil, you're cutting in and out. I don't know if there's something wrong with your phone line or something, but we're missing every, like, fourth or fifth word.
Yeah, okay, so...
I don't know what that
now?
Is. Anyway, listen, I have many more questions that I'd love to ask you, but we only have about 5 minutes left, and I'd like to give some of the other people on the call an opportunity to ask some questions. So I'm going to unmute the lines and let a couple of other people ask questions, and maybe you'd be willing to come back and do another one of these in the future.
Yeah, sure, Kim. I'd love to, yeah.
Okay, hold on 1 second. I got to unmute the lines. Everybody, does anybody have any questions for Dr. Sunil Anand?
Yes, I want to ask, what
is
the puja
kundasar
used this? I couldn't understand the remedy.
Is it the last remedy with Sakali Kornutum? Is that the one you're asking about, the last remedy?
Yeah, what was that?
Yeah, Sakali Kornutum, Ergot.
That's right, yeah.
That was the last, but before that, that is for the boy.
What was the one before that, Sunil?
Before that, which one was that now? If they mention the case, then maybe it will strike me.
Sabina.
Oh, Sabina. It was a Sabina case.
Yeah, that was the Sabina case, yeah.
Good. Other questions for Dr. Sunil Anand? Here's an opportunity to ask questions of a very highly esteemed international homeopathic teacher and practitioner.
Yeah, I have a question.
Please go ahead.
You were talking about the levels and that the best results come from, you know, when you get to the source. So I was wondering if you're treating someone that way and they get an acute whose symptoms are not covered by that particular remedy, do you use intercurrent remedies or what do you do?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'd say, you know, the way I'd address it, you know, in the aphorism, as you must be aware, but I'm just pointing it out, again, there is an aphorism which very clearly says that in the acute, in fact, the state becomes even more evident. So, in fact, that's my other advice, which I may have missed, so I'm glad you asked this question. My advice to you would be is that don't hesitate during the acutes. Be comfortable with the acutes, because in the acutes, the whole situation will become very, very evident. So, in fact, all I have to do is, if in another case, it would probably take me an hour or two in a chronic case, when there's an acute manifestation, to see the general and the local, in fact, becomes much more evident and more easy for me, really.
Sunil, do you find that when a patient gets an acute situation, that their chronic remedy oftentimes addresses the acute, or do you find that you need different remedies? What is your own experience?
I think if we are on the right remedy, Kim, because the two things can happen, right? I mean, if they are not on a similimum, then yes, sometimes the way the body works is that it needs help. So if it can go into and if you've passed that stage of the constitutional remedy which comes up as an acute, then it will go directly to the organ that is in distress. So if it is a respiratory condition, it could go towards antimony tartaricum, for example. But on the other hand, if it is seen earlier, and if, for example, in this boy whom we gave ferrum phosphoricum, I am pretty certain that once we know the essence of his case, even in the acute, all we have to look at is the same parameters on which we prescribe: resistance, friendliness, need to move slowly. If you see that and you see redness and plethora, or what we call false plethora of ferrum metallicum, even in an acute, the ferrum phosphoricum would absolutely work and would be the right thing to give.
Okay, good. Good questions for Dr. Sunil Anand.
Kim?
Yes, go ahead.
It's Murray.
Hey, Murray, do you have a question?
I don't have a question. I just want to say that one of Sunil's seminars, he will be dealing with acutes.
Oh, okay, thanks for sharing that. The next one that he's doing is going to be on acutes? Is that what, or everyone, he talks about acutes. Murray? Did you just, is it the next seminar in particular is focusing on acutes, or in
no,
all
not
the seminars?
The next one. They can see the list.
I think the next one is on ADD and autism, but
yeah.
I think it's about somewhere third or fourth where we do just acutes and the approach to acutes. Yeah, that's a very important topic, yeah.
Okay.
You know, also the other thing, Kim, that I want to add is about what he was talking about levels.
Yeah, go ahead. Did you want to share something, Murray? Go ahead.
Yeah, this thing about levels. Sunil and I were studying a case today together, and the case had a lot of catarrh, sticky, viscid catarrh, pressure in the root of the nose, and it looked like just if you were just looking at that local level, you could easily give Kallibicromicum.
Sure.
On that level, what we call, you know, the second level, if you look at Rajan's levels. But then as we look further and further into the case, we ended up coming up with sarracenia. And then I was looking at, I couldn't hear the Materia Medica when I came home today, and then the Materia Medica says catarrh extending to the antrum of Hymar, maxillary sinuses, pressing pain in the root.
Oh, fantastic. Can you say, I couldn't hear you, it's very hard to hear you. Could you say the remedy again?
Sarracenia.
Okay, thank you. I couldn't hear
pitcher
it.
Pitcher plant.
Yeah, no, I know.
That's a pitcher plant, Kim. It's a
yeah, no, I know what it is. I just couldn't hear what he was saying. Okay, good. Other questions for Doc? We just have about time for about maybe one more question.
Huh? Can you repeat where you get the CDs?
So as Kim said, the email ID of Donna Paz, she's the one who's coordinating this whole series of seminars. She's doing a great job on that. I'm sure she's listening to this as well. So she is the right person. If you contact her, she will tell you how to get this, whether you attend the seminar or not, and how it can reach you, and payments and things like that.
Want to say the email address again?
Yeah, the email address is Powers, P-O-W-E-R-S, of F homeopathy, at M as in Mary, E as in elephant, .com. So Powers of Homeopathy at ME.com. And again, if you want more information about the seminar series, you can get that information at the Homeopathic Academy in Vancouver, Vancouver Homeopathy Academy website, which is www.homeopathyvancouver.com. So I see that we're out of time, and Dr. Nan, this was a very fascinating call. A a lot of very useful information, a lot of excellent case examples. I hope you'll come back and perhaps do another one in the near future. And Murray, maybe you'll do one as well. I've invited you a number of times, and I'd love to have you participate in one of these calls.
Great. Let's talk about it. Okay.
Yeah, thanks, Kim. Thanks so much.
Okay.
Thanks,
and everyone, let's give Dr. Sunil Anand a big thank you, a big North American thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.